Time to take a look at consumer protection issues. We're going to zero in a little bit on bundling in telecommunications services. Today, Larry Mueller here with my guest Jim Rabbit of the Bureau of Consumer Protection in our Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And if you're like me, you've had, and my family, we've had lots of pitches to have our cable TV and our internet and our phone service all from one provider. Jim Rabbit's going to talk with us about that and answer other questions for you as well. So give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Jim, welcome back. Nice to have you with us again.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm happy to be here.
Can you save enough money in these the triple play packages to be worth the disruption of switching services? I guess that's the issue.
Well, I think you can save money. The problem is a lot of people, once they start churning from one service to the next. And you really, you know, in order to go through all the hassle of changing and the expenses and sometimes the long-term contracts, you really need to kind of lock in and stay in one place for a little while. The primary problem with all these big bundles of services, often they're not provided by one party.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to figure out who do I talk to if I have a problem or an issue or I need service. The person that sold me the service may not be the person who's actually providing the service. So it gets very complicated. We're encouraging consumers to become educated. It's not the old phone company anymore or not the old cable company anymore. There are lots of options.
Yeah, and it's going to take a lot of work. And I know what you're talking about in terms of something goes wrong. You call one person and they say, and I've had this happen to me, well, no, we're not the one. You've got to call this person. And then you call that person. And they say, well, no, we're not the one. It's the one you called earlier. And nobody claims responsibility.
Exactly. You know, and sometimes what you have, I mean, it's possible to get your cell phone and your internet service and your television and your, you know, any of your other phone, long-distance phone services, local phone services from one contact person. But often that's not the contact person that's going to service all of those accounts.
Yeah.
And that consumers are calling us saying, I can't figure out how to cancel. The person that I bought from won't cancel for me or won't help me through a problem. So we're trying to make consumers aware of all these different services. When you buy them by the bundle, find out who you're talking to. Find out if they have a single point of contact for service work or for help.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly, some of the telecommunications companies won't take a cancellation by telephone. They require you to put it in writing to them. So you might buy it over the phone, but you might have to cancel in writing, and that's a little bit of a factor you need to think about when you're making that purchase decision.
Need to ask those questions.
Yes, you do.
Reed in Stoughton is up first here. Hi, Reed.
Good morning, Jim. I just took you off speakerphone. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. The reason I'm calling is I'd like to know to whom does a consumer complain and from whom within government does a consumer get assistance for an issue like this in brief. I was overcharged for a period of time and didn't realize the overcharge until it came to light. And when I went to the cell phone provider, they stonewalled me and ultimately refused to give me the information, and now I've turned the account over to collections because we were talking a sizable amount of money. So I'm sort of between a rock and a hard spot. They won't deal with me, and I don't know who to turn to report the problem and ask for assistance.
Well, there's a couple of things consumers should know. There are two different state agencies that work on telecommunications. The Public Service Commission is the old regulatory agency for telecommunications, and they are regulating still a lot of the traditional quality of service, placement of telephone poles, things like that. The contract part of a lot of the telecommunications service now has fallen to consumer protection. So in the case that you described, you probably would want to file a complaint with us. See if we can work with the company to resolve the issue. Sometimes, you know, our authority is limited to if the company is doing something illegal. against our rules. Sometimes we may have to tell you you're going to have to get private help as well. But we would take a look at the complaint and see what we can do with it and give you some advice about it.
And how does he get complaint form?
The easiest way, call our toll-free number. That's 1-800-422-7128. And whoever answers there can send you a complaint form.
Sounds great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Ron in Newburgh, I believe, is next. Ron, hello.
Yes, good morning on a dreary day.
Yes.
On the larger topic of controlling and getting your money back and that, does it help the people if when they sign up for one of these bundled services, they say, bill my credit card? Then your credit card agency maybe can go and beat these guys over the head. Now, the question that I called up about was, as far as telephone credit cards, I used to use a telephone credit card at 3 cents a minute until a year and a half ago, they upped the rate for in-state calls to 9 cents a minute. Long distance out of state is still 3 cents a minute. Well, this makes no sense. They say, well, in Wisconsin, we've got so many different end companies that get out to the actual home to come up with a service, therefore we have to charge more. Well, no, other states have the same problem, that when you get out to the consumer's number, somebody has to come up with a local connection. So I talked to Public Service Commission. They heard something about it but did nothing about getting this rate changed.
Wow, really good questions. The first question about having your bill go through your credit card, so you have some options. I'm not sure what the good advice is on that. Your credit card company generally will help you if you have a charge that's incorrect. But when it comes to the telecommunications business, I'm not sure they're going to fight over all the technical little charges on a telephone bill if you disagree with, you know, there are lots of different line item fees on a phone bill that the credit card company may just not be willing to fight that fight. So they may hold up paying the bill a little bit, but in the end, I think they will tell you you need to be able to prove that those charges are incorrect. The question about the calling cards, this is something that's been going on recently. They used to sell calling cards by the minute. Now they sell them by the unit, is what we're seeing. And a unit on interstate calls is 1 minute. It takes 3 units for in-state calls. It takes 3 units to make up 1 minute. So they're really, his price quote was exactly correct. 3 cents a minute for interstate, 9 cents a minute intrastate. No one really controls rates in Wisconsin for services of this type. So our involvement is to make sure that when they sell you that card, that you know what it is you're buying. And you can walk with your feet and go buy a different card from somebody else. That's kind of the focus right now, is just make sure that they're disclosed properly.
So they can charge what they want.
As long as
they tell you what they're charging.
For this service in the state, there is no price control.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I think that somebody's got to clobber these guys over the head.
Yeah. Well, the way to do it is to not buy the card from them.
I think the trend in the last 10 years with legislation has been to open up this entire industry to competition, with the thought that competition will cause prices to go down and services to be better. And new products to be introduced, and that seems to be the trend. So consumers really need to be heavily involved if you want to push the marketplace in the direction you want it to go.
Yeah. Ron, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your
great
call.
Questions.
They're good questions, and I feel your frustrations. I do. Boyd in Milwaukee is up next, so let's go there. Hi, Boyd.
Hi, Larry. Good morning, and hello to your guest. I'll just tell you a little bit. Briefly, I was actually doing subcontracting work for an organization in Milwaukee that was licensed out by Time Warner, and then I also did only for a week some similar work for AT&T. And we did, you know, push these bundle campaigns, and usually, you know, for instance, if let's say I was in a neighborhood that was had a bit more upper income, you would, like, push internet, and for lower income, they usually wanted phone because they you know, couldn't afford computers. And I noticed that a number of people that went with these campaigns, and some of them that I probably had sold, they were not getting savings that they said they were. Like, if you'd bundle internet, cable, and phone, it'd be $99, and that would be per month for anywhere from 1 to 2 years. And they noticed that, you know, that was supposed to be locked in, but they did see that their bills after a few months would go up. And then with AT&T, I was selling UVerse, where they had internet and this fiber optics system, for which is like the next big thing, I guess, for cable. And for them, you almost had to get involved with that, though. You almost had to have practically spotless credit. I mean, so if you wanted to even sell a package like that to a lower income neighborhood, I mean, forget it. I mean, because 9 times out of 10, people's credit wasn't just that good. And I think, yeah, there's just a lot of little underlining fees in there that, you know, kind of come up and, you know, hit you broadside if you're not careful. At least that's the impression I got.
Hmm. Well, thanks for calling. Comment, Jim?
Well, that's a very, very good point, is that you need to ask, what will my bill be? Mm-hmm. How much do I write the check for? You're telling me $99 a month, you know, and then the check ends up having to be for $122 or something like that, because there's all kinds of other things that I need to know about. The law is pretty clear. It says they're supposed to tell you, when they're soliciting, all of the costs and expenses that you may incur. But consumers are very highly encouraged to ask that question. The other thing is a lot of times there are products being sold with introductory rates.
Yeah.
And consumers tell us that they didn't understand that was an introductory rate. You know, they have marketing people who spend some time trying to figure out how to present these products. And sometimes consumers need to really ask carefully. I'm signing up for 2 years. Is this price guaranteed for 2 years?
Yeah.
I had an interesting occasion at my own home, and I study this stuff on a daily basis, where I signed up, and within 60 days, the company raised the price.
Oh, yeah, it happens.
I called them up, and I said, I'm on a two-year contract, and they said, that doesn't mean we can't raise the price. I had missed that little point in the contract. And I, you know, you assume a two-year contract is for this price. It's not.
No.
So, yep. Very, very good point. As far as spotless credit, you know, that is an issue when you're buying telecommunications service, as long as everything else. You need to look at your credit record. That may have an impact. This is getting to be a lot of your monthly expense.
Yeah.
By the time you get internet and television and telephone and cell phone, they're starting to check credit records now before they sell you these products, because it is pretty pricey.
Yeah. Yep. Thanks, Boyd.
You gotcha.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Steve in Madison is up next. Steve, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Good morning. Yes, I have a question on a different topic. I just read an article in the Milwaukee Journal this weekend that the Supreme Court issued a decision on something involving the Home Improvements Practices Act. It involved remodeling of a home in Brookfield. But I'm wondering if that also applies to new construction. I live in a two-year-old condominium, and we're having some difficulties. And it seems like, I don't know if this would apply or not, because they awarded double damages, and they paid attorney's fees and all kinds of good things for the consumer.
Good question. There is a different law in Wisconsin for home improvement than there is for new construction. And violations of the home improvement law do allow for double damages plus court costs plus attorney's fees. And so that was the Supreme Court was looking at the home improvement law. That law is very specific. It only covers if you're doing modifications to existing buildings. So it does not help you with the new home construction problem.
But in new construction, can you get double damages and attorney fees too, or is that prohibited?
There is nothing in the law that says you can get double damages, so the courts would more than likely, if you can't point them to somewhere, they're going to award just single damages, and your attorney's fees will more than likely come out of those damages.
Okay. Yeah. Then on new construction, does your agency work on that also or not?
New construction is not part of consumer protection law. The Department of Commerce does have a section that registers new home construction, and they work on new home construction complaints. They have slightly different laws than ours, but I would encourage you to contact them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Jim Rabbit of the Bureau of Consumer Protection and our Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking lots of consumer protection issues. We started in and zeroed in a bit on bundling telecommunications services, but we're taking other questions as well with Jim Rabbit of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Larry Mueller here. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And we'll go to Nick and Racine next. Nick, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. I have a question about I've been living in an apartment about 4 years, and we've decided now with the market, you know, and the interest rates, what they are, to purchase a house. And so we went and gave about a 45-day notice.
Okay.
And they've come back now, and they're saying that we have to give a 60-day notice. We're on month by month now. And I was told by my uncle, who's a lawyer, that he thinks we only have to give about a 28- or 30-day notice. I looked it up on the Internet, and I can't really find any clarification on this, and I'm just trying to figure out, do I actually have to give them a 60-day notice, even though I'm, you know, month by month?
Hmm. No, you should be able to give them a 28-day notice. The very nature of a month-by-month contract is that either party can not renew with a month's notice. So if you give them 28 days from the next rent-paying date, or the which would be your renewal date, that should be it. If you're on a annual contract, you're on a regular one-year lease, then, of course, you're breaking a one-year lease, and there are a whole bunch of other issues. But this is pretty straightforward, month by month, 28 days from the end of the rent paying period, and you should be done.
Okay. So I'll go tell them that. If there's problems, I can just look you guys up on the Internet.
Absolutely. Our toll free number also is 1-800-422-7128, and you can call, and we can send out all kinds of brochures about landlord tenant and explain that issue.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks a
good
lot.
Good call.
John in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, John.
Two quick questions. One was on phone number transportability. I was wondering what the rules are, and is it possible to move phone numbers to internet phone accessibility, and do I have to pay more to do that? And then the other question was on rebate checks. If you get a rebate check and it says you have to cash within 30 days and you miss that 30-day date, is there any way to get the rebate money?
Hmm.
Okay. The transportability of your phone to an internet, which is called a VOIP, voice over internet protocol, telephone. We've heard some reports of difficulties. You can do it, and the companies tell you they can do it, but there seems to be a little bit of interim between the time you sign up. They give you a temporary number while they transport your number, and it may take several weeks before your real number, your actual number, comes back through. So we've had some reports of that. In the meantime, consumers tell us, well, my kids were trying to call me at the old number, and I didn't know there was this temporary number for a week or two. So I was missing messages, and they were going to voicemail and all kinds of things like that. So I guess I would very carefully ask, if you're thinking about going to an internet phone, ask them about the transport process that they have and how long it will take and what kind of difficulties you might have.
Okay.
The question about the rebate check. I have a puzzled look on my face. If you can't see me from here, but I'm not exactly sure that there's anything you can do if they've marked that check as voided after a length of time. I would guess someone at the Department of Financial Institutions, they're the guys that regulate banking and financial processes, might be able to give you a definitive answer, and I would hate to say anything that I wasn't confident in.
Yeah, okay. They have no legal responsibility for providing the money if you signed up for the rebate and you got the rebate. Once that expires, they get the money back then, huh?
I really am not
Sure how it
I'm
works.
Not positive. I would contact the Department of Financial Institutions, get a more definitive answer than what I could give you.
Sure. That might be something the state might want to look at if there's some legislature that's out there listening. That it seems to me that if you go through the effort and they run these short time periods where the check expires. I mean, it took them 8 weeks to get me the rebate check, and then they say the rebate check has to be cashed within 30 days, and I missed that. And it seems that they can take longer to send the check than it is to cash it.
Yeah. Well, DFI may have something to say about that. I'm not exactly sure what that kind of limitation on a negotiable instrument, how much legal standing it has.
All right. Good luck. Thanks, John. Marie in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Marie.
Hi. My plumber told me the service call would be $50 and then expenses plus. The electric auger he used to unplug my pretty new toilet, one-year-old, costs $100. When I challenged him, he said, oh, that's a standard fee to use that electric auger.
So he charged you $50 plus $100 for the auger.
Yeah, and a few other dollars for something else. But basically, it was about $160 in the end.
Okay.
Oh, Lord.
It was the Waters Plumbing Company.
There's not a real easy answer for this because there are very few laws in Wisconsin that regulate price. Most of the laws say that businesses can set their prices as long as consumers get information about the price.
Well, I didn't get any until it was too late. What would you pay for an electric auger to unplug a toilet?
I have no idea.
I have no idea either.
I can tell you what, I would go buy the auger myself, but I'm a tool guy, so that works for me. I would say you could file a complaint with the Bureau. I'm not sure that we have a real strong standing in that kind of instance, but it seems to me that the plumber should have told you before they went beyond that $50 what the next step was going to be, so you shouldn't have been surprised, and you should have been able to refuse it before he did the work and say, that's too much, I'll hire someone else.
I wanted to unplug, and I would have paid $5 million.
Yeah. Well, and that is, part of it is when you pay the service fee, you're already invested in getting them there, so most of the time people end up paying whatever they quote.
Yeah, whatever they quote. So you can still file a complaint. Call the 800 number, which is 800-422-7128, and we can see what happens. But the other thing you could do is just call another plumber and just say, what do you charge? What are your charges? And then, well, what about that electric auger? Just ask them and see what they say. And if it's close to $100, it's probably the standard charge.
Yep.
Good luck, Marie. Thank you very much for calling. Joan in Milwaukee, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Joan.
Hello. I have a problem. I had a wonderful contractor, I thought, who sited our house going on 5 years ago, and did a beautiful job. The only problem was he finished the job in the fall. In the spring, when we tried to open casement windows, 7 big ones facing the backyard, not one of them could be open more than 2 inches because the frame he put on for the storms came above the window push-out. We talked to him about it, and he was going to fix it, my husband said. But his solution was simply to cut down the base of the windows and lower the whole thing and put a false top on the top and the bottom. Well, that was not acceptable. And he had another man come over, and he had a good solution. But that fellow, he said, well, this is a no-brainer. You put a permanent storm on the top and a push-in on the bottom. My husband since died, and this man is refusing to fix it at all. I guess he thinks if it's a woman, she's not going to have much power. Well, we thought, and so did the building inspector in Shorewood, thought that we can solve this because you have to have 2 windows in a room that open to the outside. Well, what they found out when the man went in, the contractor went in with his lawyer, was you have to have a building inspection permit for siding a house, but not for windows. And he said, if we were to get after anybody, it would be you. So here I am, and I'm fearful this guy is trying to wait out the 7 years, is it? And then you're off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
Spring is here. Summer is coming. We have a beautiful yard, beautiful windows. We can't open any of them.
Yeah.
What to do? How do you solve this?
Jim?
This is going to be partially work that you're going to have to do, in that you may end up having to sue the person. Most home improvement contracts have language to the effect that we will do the job in a workmanlike manner. And I think you could make a case that this was not workmanlike if the windows won't open anymore. We could have you file a complaint with Consumer Protection, and we may be able to look at if we would have to look at the contract and see if, in fact, he's violating the contract.
Yeah.
But the other option, maybe you have to take him to court and talk to the judge about the fact that it wasn't done in a workmanlike manner.
Okay. Well, it's a no-brainer that if you have storms on, you can't open the window.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer. But you may have to take him to court.
You may, yeah. This may be one you have to do yourself. We might be able to try, but, you know, if we can't, that's kind of the hard part with consumer protection. We can enforce the laws and we can try and mediate people's problems, but sometimes in the end you have to take them yourself, and this might be one.
No. Sorry, John.
Well...
Give it a shot, and good luck to you. But file a complaint anyway. 1-800-422-7128 is that number to call. You can file a complaint. You still got some time here yet on this, but otherwise, and would that be a small claims court thing? Because that could be a lot of money.
Yeah. It depends on the value of the contract, whether or not you get into small claims. You know, they have a limit there. I think it's $5,000. So you may be over the limit for small claims on a window job.
In which case, you have to probably get an attorney.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good luck, Joan. Thank you. And Regina in Milwaukee is next. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just have a question because I had a very
We're having a hard time. Can you talk?
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Well, I had a landlord-tenant dispute. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And anyway, so I mean, it was getting very costly hiring lawyers and all that. So I sent a copy of the contract to the DHCP, and I knew the landlord was in violation. There was a roof leak that the city had said that she had to fix that she didn't fix. She would not give me receipts for the rent I paid. Some of the receipts I still had, but some of them I did not. And when it came right down to it, the last time that I paid her, she would not give me a receipt. And I still don't have all the receipts. But when I looked up the DHCP statute, it says right in there that the landlord is required to give the tenant a receipt. Otherwise, you end up in small claims court and all kinds of stuff. And I've been a landlord before, and even if the tenant paid me cash or whatever, or sent it by my husband or whatever, I always sent the tenant a receipt. So when I sent the contract to the DHCP, they wrote her a letter saying she was in violation of like four different clauses, you know, where she didn't have to fix the roof. I guess she had put that in there, but, you know, that's like structural or, you know, it's all kind of legal jargon. And at the end of the day, I was out of about maybe $5,000 over stuff that she was obviously in violation of. And, you know, to me, it was just very frustrating that the DHCP makes these laws, and you can look them up, and then when you go to court, and this is the other thing, I could not figure out why none of the judges in the court, because I went to court two or three times, would order her to give me a receipt, would order her to fix the roof leak, would order her to remove the mold. I don't understand. So I say, okay, if the court doesn't, the court won't enforce the DHCP statutes. Who will? That's my question.
Yeah. Wow. That's a good question.
Well, I can give you a brief primer on how this works. The legislature passes the law that says anyone who violates one of the DATCP regulations, and there are a couple of things that can happen. The first is that if DATCP takes prosecution action, if we go to the district attorney and have the person prosecuted, that money goes into the state school fund. So it doesn't go back to the consumer very, very rarely. Once in a while, we can convince the judge to also order restitution to the victims. But most of the time, it's fines and forfeitures to the school fund. The second thing that happens is if a business violates our laws, which is what sounds like it's happening here, you should be able to go to court. And if you can convince the judge that they violated the law, the judge should be able to order double damages plus court costs plus attorney's fees. So I'm not sure why the courts didn't see it that way. And that's a difficulty, you know, maybe in the court system or maybe just they didn't understand what they were looking at. So that's the long answer. I don't think it gives you a whole lot of satisfaction, but in a lot of times we are dependent on the judges and the court system and the district attorneys to make some moves that we need made. So
yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And Jason and Baraboo, I believe, is next. Jason, hi to you.
Hello.
Hi.
I had a quick question. I went and bought onions at the local grocery store, and they're the kind that just lay out freely, like your apples and fruits and all that. I put them in the bag that they provide and went through the little self-checkout lane and weighed them, and it came up to, let's say, $1.99. Well, then I took them out of the bag and weighed them, and it came up to $1.98. And I was wondering if it's lawful for them to charge you for the bag of that kind of stuff without you knowing it. Granted, it's only a penny, but enough people do that in a particular grocery store over some time. They're making pretty good money off their bags that you don't know you're getting charged for.
Yeah.
What a great question. The weight of the packaging is called tare. And it is against weights and measures law for shops to charge you for tare. So the scale that you run your product across, when you identify what the product is, it should know what kind of package it's in and be pre-programmed to deduct the weight of the package. Most scales nowadays are set up that way. Sometimes they have to manually punch in some numbers, but in general, it should know when you go to the deli and you get that big heavy plastic container, it should know what the container is as it's going across and deduct that weight. So you're correct. It should have, shouldn't have rung up a different price, whether it was in the bag or out of the bag. The only other thing is maybe taking it out of the bag, you shook some of the dirt or onion skins off. I don't know what would have brought it a penny difference, but it should read the same.
Yeah.
Sure. All right. If I were to try that again and it got the same result, who do you contact about something like that?
Call our toll-free number. Yep. Weights and Measures is part of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. We have inspectors out in the stores all the time, and this is an issue for us. We've had filed cases throughout the years on this issue to make sure that they're doing it correctly. So call the 800 number, file the complaint. We'll have an inspector at the shop.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Jason, for calling. And Nancy and Maribel, your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, good morning. My question is this. We live on a farm, and we talk to lots of farmers. And I was wondering, a local farmer had bought a used piece of equipment, a huge expense from a John Deere dealer. And I was wondering about the lemon law. Is that in force for used equipment? He was told who the previous owner had been, but they were not fully clear on the repairs and what else needed to be done but had not been done on the equipment. And my question to you is, does this fall under the lemon law? Should everything be reported?
No, it does not. The lemon law in Wisconsin is specifically for the purchase of new vehicles, and it goes back to the manufacturer of the vehicle, not the seller. So it's specifically targeted toward serious defects that happened during the manufacture of the vehicle. There also is another small lemon law about motorized wheelchairs, which passed several years ago. But there again, it goes back to the manufacturer and the defects, not to a used vehicle. Used vehicles, very much buyer beware, and especially farm equipment. There are very few laws about farm equipment.
Now, if this was originally manufactured incorrectly and then they fixed one aspect of the incorrectness, but they didn't fix the other three disc things, would that be part of going back to the original seller? Even though it's been at a dealer and a previous owner already?
Yeah, the lemon law is very specific to vehicles that are licensed, you know, motor vehicles licensed to drive on the road. So it's cars, trucks. It doesn't even, I believe it does cover semi-trucks as well, but does not cover equipment doesn't have to have a license to drive on the road. So your option there is probably some kind of a private action if they knew about the problem when they sold the equipment to you. You know, you might want to consult your private attorney to see if there's anything you can do to make them bear the burden of that.
Yeah.
But that's...
And can it be reported to the Chamber of Commerce, the consumer thing for, you know, because they feel it was, you know, just railroaded through and nobody alerted the buyer, even though they had done some of the repair previous for the original owner?
That's one of those things that, yes, you can report to us. You know, even though we have very little jurisdiction, but we do take those reports, and sometimes when a legislator calls and says what's going on out there, we can look up something if a legislator is interested in passing new laws regulating something. Those records of complaints that we weren't able to help become important at that point.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. And, boy, Jim, the time flew by.
Wow, it sure did.
Well, I'm really glad you came by, and I hope you'll do this again. Once more, that number to file a complaint is 1-800-422-7128, correct?
Thank you. That's correct.
All right, thanks. We'll see you again, Jim. Thanks.
Okay.
Jim Rabbit of the Bureau of Consumer Protection and our Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection with us today, and... Oh, there's always lots of issues in the consumer protection area, and I know we can't help on all of them, but Jim does a pretty good job of following up on as many as they legally can. They're more than happy to pursue. Coming up, we'll talk climate and weather with Steve Ackerman and John Martin, the guys responsible for the 100 inches of snow in the Madison and Dane County area over this last winter. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.